with you folks. Senate Bill 299 will not be heard this afternoon. We're going to carry that over until Thursday evening. That's the purposes of allowing the city to talk to some property owners about an issue that they're presently discussing. And if they can have an agreement, that's fine. If not, then that'll be a different story. Senate Bill 409 is not going to be heard today because we've already, I understand, a difficult bill has already been passed. Senate Bill 494 has been pulled at the request of the proponents, so it will not be heard either. So we're going to open the work session of Senate Bill 511. Ray, what is it, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 511 requires local government to provide a list of documentation to an applicant for a permit under the land use decision or zone change. It begins the time period for a decision by local government on land use application at the time of the first activity required of the applicant and prohibits including costs for providing notice beyond the requirements of statute and application fees. We've heard this once before, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That was on February 23rd, where we talked about the 120-day rule and predictability of process, problems with the bill as it was written then, need for the work group, et cetera, et cetera.
So there are no amendments to that to the 511?
Yes.
I'm trying to put okay. Senator Sitton, you want to move
this one for me?
Sure. Senator Corcoran?
There's no amendments, right?
No.
Move Senate Bill 511 to the floor to do that.
Senator Corcoran, move Senate Bill 511 to the floor to pass recommendation and discussion. Mm-hmm. Any objections? Okay, now for call roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair, aye. Senator Bill 511 passed the floor to pass recommendation. We'll offer Senator Beyer the opportunity to carry the bill, Diane, if not, then I will or nothing else.
Thank
you. So, the work session on 511, open the work session on Senate Bill 656. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 656, we heard on the 20th, it authorizes persons adversely affected by local government land use decision to appeal the decision within 3 years based on local government's failure to comply with notice provision. We do have -1 amendments that were handed to us by Senator Shannon's staff, Mr. Chair.
Senator, you want to talk about...
Yes, okay, with these amendments, too. They allow due process from local governments fail to give notice or comply with their own ordinances. And the amendments address the true concerns that were brought to the committee's attention last week that the former bill did not address.
This is for the constituent, I believe, that you
yes.
had in this
part
of the area.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. Especially with the amendments.
You're in your session, Senator Shannon. You want to move the...
Yes, I move the -1, 656-1 amendment.
Senator Shannon moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 656. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
I move Senate Bill 656 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Shannon moves Senate Bill 656 as amended to the floor due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Sure.
Senator Corker.
I'm still confused about the issue of notice. I'm trying to remember from our other hearing, isn't there some confusion about who falls into the web of notice? The applicant, the owner of the record, any recognized neighborhood community organization, boundaries include the site.
This was brought by neighbors that have lived there for 20 years. And,
this has to do, I think this has to do with a 120-day notice issue, but then I think the point that your constituent raised is the fact that they were in their identification.
Never.
Yes.
And
they were left out of the loop.
Okay.
This is what we're trying to correct, is that issue.
So, are the counties okay? There's counties in here?
Mr. Schleck, do you have any comments on this bill?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. Chair, we've looked at the bill. Initially, we thought it might conflict with a bill you sent out earlier, Senate Bill 467. But on reviewing it again, we don't see that conflict at this point. It has been our understanding that if somebody was entitled to notice within the notice area and did not receive the notice, they had an unlimited amount of time to appeal at this point. So that this, if it was actually an unlimited amount of time, this actually would reduce that by establishing the 3 years. So we have no objection to the bill at this point.
What's your question from the person? Maybe you have the protocol rule, please.
Aye.
Aye. Chair Rice, number 656 of the minutes, pass the floor to pass recommendation. Senator Shannon,
yes, I would do that.
Senator Shannon will carry. Close the work session on Senate Bill 656 and open on Senate Bill 1184.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1184.
We'll get a hold of him. We'll come get
him. Modifies the definition of moratorium on construction or land development. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do have -1 amendments that were handed me late this morning. Mr. Chandler from the Oregon Building Industry Association, the last time we met, said that he would have amendments to 1184 also.
We have the -1s.
Yeah.
Chandler, do you have other -1s?
These are
-1s. You want to explain this, what the -1s are?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Building Industry Association, on 1184-1 amendment. When I was here before, I explained the problem we were having. These amendments attempt to address it, and I think do so by making it clear that if they are running out of public facilities, the proper response is to declare a moratorium, not to use the loophole that's currently available in the law. What the amendments do is they delete the bold. They add new language to the current law in line 8. So the sentence would read, moratorium on construction land development means engaging in a pattern of practice of delay or stopping issuance of permits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or construction on any land, and then insert these words, including delaying or denying issuance based on inadequate public facilities, and then deleting the rest of the bold print. And then the second piece of the amendment is to make it clear down below in the current law that a moratorium, exempted from the definition of moratorium, do not include denial or delay of issuing permits based on added public facilities, that was the intent of the moratorium statute when it was adopted back in 1979. The language of complying with other laws or ordinances that in the current law was meant to tell people that if you went in for a building permit on a single family home in a commercial zone and did not get it, you couldn't say they declared a moratorium because that violates the ordinance. It was not intended to allow jurisdictions to end run the public facilities requirements, and these amendments, we worked these out with the cities and counties, appreciate their assistance on them, and the districts.
John, you know what the cities are and the counties are? In other words, the cities and the counties are okay with these amendments, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're sitting here, if I can throw something at me, if that doesn't matter.
Mr. Schlatt?
This is a surprise. Mr. Slack just happened to indicate that, except for me, nobody's seen these amendments. I can't say that they are exactly what we talked about.
Mr. Slack, take a moment and look those over if you have some concerns, and then if so, give us a high sign.
Tick, 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 tick.
Senator Shannon Wu on 1184, and Mr. Chandler has offered some -1 amendments to the bill. While we're waiting, I'll let you folks in the audience know that we've got 2 more hours this evening, and then we have 4 hours Thursday, and that's it for Senate bills. And we're going to try our best to get those bills out that we have been in the process of working, and otherwise we'll be shut down on Senate bills come Thursday night.
Senator Tarno, what time are you working tonight?
6 to 8.
Yeah? Yep. Because I think I'll be over there from 6 to 8, but I can come back for a vote.
We may not, here in the seat.
Oh.
We may not be past 7. You know, the way the things are going, I think we might be in pretty good shape.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
I like your 6:30. 6:30?
I'll be there.
Well, if you wouldn't talk to me, Mr. Chair, and you would enunciate more clearly, if people don't understand what you're saying, you might get out of here early.
I'll move a chair, yes.
Oh, yeah.
You mean you're not going to run?
Oh, no. I'll get you a chair. Last
one. For the record, I've been asked to indicate that it looks okay to the cities and counties. If there's any tweaking that's required as a result of reading in more detail.
I'll tell you what they have.
We won't do it all. There.
Okay, yeah, so we are in work session, chairing the motion on the -1.
Okay.
Senator Corcoran.
Move the -1 to Senate Bill 1184.
Senator Corcoran, move the -1 to Senate Bill 1184. Is discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Corcoran.
Move 1184 is amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Corcoran, move Senate Bill 1184 is amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator George? Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator
Wild?
Aye. Senator Turner? Chair, aye. Senate Bill 1184 passed the floor with due pass recommendation. Senator George will carry since he is not here. He missed out my one.
No.
Close the work session on 1184 and open on 1187. Ray? Oh, here's Senator George. He is carrying you a bill. Senator George, you lucky devil.
Just trying to get here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1187 exempts land for which exception is taken from land use planning goals protecting farm and forest land from any other land use planning goal. We heard this on the 22nd, Mr. Chair.
We have amendments to this bill.
Leave so, Mr. Chair.
Are there amendments to this bill?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Schmidt, do you want to explain these -2s? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Terry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. This is one of our priority bills. There are 2 amendments, the -1, the -2s. Both were attempts to try and clarify the bill so that that we were clear what we were trying to do. The -2s are the ones we're going to talk about because the -1 just merely inserted the word goal 14. The -2 goes a little further and actually explains a little bit more clarifying language.
Mr. Smith, we don't have -1 that seems.
The -1 were just an insertion at the end adding goal 14. That was one of our amendments to try and straighten it out. That didn't straighten it out for folks, so we went with the -2s, which are in further detail.
No, the -1s then are no longer
no
needed.
No longer needed, okay. Because the -2s take care of it.
Okay.
So what we did was strike the language in the bill, insert new language that you now see in the -2 amendments, and it simply says, land for which an exception is taken under subsection 1 of this section from goals protecting farmland and forest land shall not be subject to a goal regulating urbanization. And that's simply what we testified to the last time. You heard the testimony. We are trying to help the succession process move through quicker, easier, allowing some latitude with the local jurisdictions, moving some of the decision-making back to the local counties when they're doing exception plans, so they don't get hung up with trying to understand what is an urban use when, in fact, these are rural lands, not urban lands. So it simply said that the exception lands still need to comply with all the exceptions process, but what they don't need to comply to is a standard that doesn't comply, doesn't work as urbanization, because these aren't urban lands, they're rural lands. And I hope that clarifies it. We think it's a good bill. We think it will help the process a great deal, and look forward to working with the committee on it.
So the question that's been raised, Mr. Smith, on the other side of this is that this bill and this amendment will allow for a lot more land to come under development right next to urban growth boundaries now and farm forest land, and I mean farm agricultural land and forest land.
Senator Corcoran, Senator Tarno, that is not my understanding, and our legal counsel had talked with Metro's counsel, and it was our understanding that there was an agreement between the two parties that this bill does not apply to urban reserves, does not apply to urban lands. This is simply applies to those lands in the exceptions process. I just got off the phone with the legal counsel with Metro, just reaffirming what went on. He said that they're still in the process of looking the thing over. I reassured him that if in fact he finds something or his director finds something that is upsetting the apple cart, we'll be gladly amend the bill to be even clearer to say that this doesn't apply with urban reserves. It does not, and our legal counsel says it has not. So, but if there's any question at all, we'll amend it. And I'll state that on the record that, in fact, we will clarify that later if we have to. But at this point, they say they're neutral on the bill and but want to work with us further. And I said, I'm happy to work with you.
Okay. Anyone else?
Just quick comments. I can't imagine why you would have to go through the exceptions process within an urban reserve. There might be an exceptional case, but I don't think so. Thank you.
Any further, Mr. Rindy, if you want to comment on this, I think Bobby has some concerns or you voiced some opinions about this last week.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation Development. I don't know how to state it more clearly. Goal 14 is the underpinning of our urban reserve rule. And I also just got off the phone with Metro, and they assured me that they were concerned about how it affected Gold Fort, how it affects the urban reserve. The entire urban reserve that Metro has adopted is based on a rule that we adopted. That rule interprets Goal 14. Goal 14 doesn't apply to all the many, many exception areas put in that boundary, and I don't see how that rule would even work. And I also wanted to clarify, if I could, Senator Corcoran, your comment. What this bill will do will allow the exception areas, 750,000 acres of exception areas that generally lie within a close distance of urban growth boundary, intermingled among farm and forest land, to have intensive commercial and residential uses. So, yes, we are concerned about Costco and other high-intensity uses just outside the boundary, but not, as you stated, on farmland, but but on exception areas that are intermingled amidst farmland, which is why Mr. Schellenberg had also explained to you why he was opposing it. So with that, I'll appreciate the chance to comment.
Question, Mr. Rennie? Well, thank you very much. We are in a work session on this, and I'm going to ask what the committee wants to do with what you said.
I'll move the dash two amendments.
Senator Weil moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1187. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
We'll move SB 1187 forward as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Weil moves Senate Bill 1187 to the floor as amended with due pass recommendations. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Any questions?
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
No, but I reserve the right to vote aye on the floor.
have.
We always have that. No.
Okay.
Aye. Chair, aye. Senate Bill 1187, the minute has passed before we do pass recommendation. Senator Weil, would you take it through?
Oh.
Yeah, I sure. Just ask. You can always deny.
I will.
Senator Weil, carry. Close the work session on 1187 and open the work session on 1258. Ready?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1258 prohibits land use planning goals from restricting construction on beachfront property structures or protective structures. Use tax improvements for real property, specified elements of beachfront protective structures. We heard some testimony on this on the 22nd, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, where we talked about grandfathering and riprap. Structure was conducted prior or constructed prior to 1977. The erosion at Otter Beach, Mulock Beach, Arizona Beach, and the Berkeley Beach, Spencer Creek Bridge issue. Non-uniform application of riprap, the goal exception process. Land use planning goals 16, 17, and 18. The governor's policy on beach improvements and ODOT's position regarding Senate Bill 1258.
Okay, Senator George?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, we have amendments being drawn to this bill.
You know if they're done or?
No, they just got there.
We're going to go out of this session on Senate Bill 1258, and Ray will schedule us again for Thursday. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1258, and open the work session on Senate Bill 1220.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1220 creates a task force study how to integrate watershed enhancement and rural economic needs. It changes requirements, some of the requirements for grants under the Watershed Improvement Grant Fund. The task force is created by this measure sunsets on December 31, year 2000. We heard this on the 22nd of April, and as we heard in testimony, we talked about displaced natural resource workers, the Jobs in the Woods program, Salmon Recovery Plan, and the Watershed Restoration Workforce.
There's no amendments to 1220.
No amendments, Mr. Chair.
So we are in this session.
I do have the first amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Well, that's it.
That addresses. I didn't realize until I distributed it very far.
We'll be at ease for a couple of moments, and we'll get you the amendments made up to everybody.
Sure. Right. Okay.
You know, I don't think. Just from luck, we didn't have to have a night meeting without you guys.
What?
Well, I mean, looking at the 1220, we're going to show them out of your first system before you move on to it. And we only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bills left.
You're picking me a night session?
Well, never mind.
I
don't
know.
Yeah.
my dance song was empty.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have a night meeting.
My family calendar has no open.
What?
That's my heart.
Okay.
I don't need to.
We have the dash one through Senate Bill 1220 and Senate Open Union Spain.
Mr. Chair, I think these is going to be here. No. I think these were to satisfy some concern from the Watershed Council, but in looking at them, they're just a real sort of no-brainer specific sponsor of the bill. You know, recommendations to the 71st legislature to specify which legislature practicable from practical and
That sounds okay.
paper for Line 34, project since plan to integrate. After 4, beginning July 1st, so that the start of the sentence. And the lease includes,
okay. Senator Corker moves the dash on amendments to Senate Bill 1220. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Corker moves Senate Bill 1220 as amended. The floor do pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Chair, I Senate Bill 1220 is amended. Pass the floor. Do pass recommendation. Senator Colton, you're hearing. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1220. And we're going to go into public hearing and pass the work session on Senate Bill 759. Jan? Jan Reed, please. Ray, what is Bobby?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 759 allows an irrigation district as a condition for supplying water to a subdivision otherwise excluded from the district to require the subdivider to take measures necessary for efficient delivery of the water.
Jan?
Yes. I'm Jan Lee, Oregon Water Resources Congress. Mr. Chairman, committee members, the current law requires that a subdivision being developed in an irrigation district, from the developer's viewpoint, either decides to exclude the land so that there's no water delivery or to include it under certain conditions. ORS 545-101, the current statute, sets those conditions out, and the amendment that we're asking for today is further clarification of those requirements. Currently, you need to have underground piping, meeting or measuring, and other provisions. We're adding to that the required long-term maintenance and also some kind of administration for that point of delivery. What we found in Central Oregon, the Rogue Valley, and other areas where there's urbanization is that it's very difficult to manage subdivisions coming into the district as a result of change in UBGs. And if we can find a way to set them up efficiently to begin with, we're not going to have those problems further down the road. If a developer doesn't want to comply with the conditions, they can decide to exclude and not have the delivery. So it's an open process, a decision that the developer can make. To our knowledge, there's no one who opposes this bill.
Questions of Ms. Lee? No, I guess, Jan, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify on Senate Bill 759? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and go into work session on Senate Bill 759.
Even grandmother table.
Mr. Chair. Senator Corker.
I move 759 to the floor of the D-Pass.
Senator Corker moves Senate Bill 759 to the floor of the D-Pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair, I think Bill 759 passed the floor. Do you pass recommendation? Diane will offer Senator Hannon the opportunity to carry this bill if not, and I will close the work session on 759. Open the public hearing upon the work session on Senate Bill 838.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 838 allows facility and structures supporting open species of land to be sited in an exclusive farm use zone. It authorizes the county to approve certain land divisions smaller than the required minimum parcel size. Size declares an emergency effective upon passage. We do have gas on.
Okay, well, that's what I must have felt to tell us about this bill, I think, a little more.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Phelps, and I'm representing Metro. Metro requested this legislation so it can more effectively and efficiently administer its Open Spaces, Parks, and Streams program. The program is based on a willing seller approach. There's no condemnation or any other kind of public action. If people are willing to sell their land and it's the kind of land that fits the Metro's profile for Open Spaces, they purchase it. Many landowners have indicated to Metro that they would like to see their land preserved, but they're not ready to sell their home. And this legislation gives that flexibility. The legislation will allow a lot line adjustment so landowners can retain existing residents while selling surrounding acreage to Metro for permanent open space and natural habitat protection. Keeps the existing home in the marketplace and on the property tax rolls. Saves the taxpayer funds. For example, in Exhibit A, the home site that's identified in the square on the far right, cost an additional $300,000 had we not had to purchase that in order to acquire this land. We could use that $300,000 for another purchase. Allows for an effective park development for safe and accessible parks. In Exhibit B, you have this area in Washington County. This portion up here is what Metro's interested in. It protects Paulton River and a number of other kinds of habitat and plants on the stream bank. The lower half, the Paulton Park and Recreation District, would like to develop that for parks for its patrons. Whether it be sports fields or whatever the case may be. Right now we cannot do that. And in Exhibit C is very much similar to the one in A. This one's in Clackamas County. There's a person living here, an elderly woman, who really does want to leave this land in preserve, but she's really at a time in her life where she doesn't want to change other circumstances, and so if we had legislation, we could accommodate her. That's the purpose of legislation.
Okay. Do you want to oppose this legislation, Ray, you know?
I have talked to various interest groups, and as far as I know, Mr. Chair, no. I think there are some people that may be a little nervous about what they might consider unintended consequences, and we'll continue to work with them, but basically I'm not aware.
Okay. Questions of the committee? You will understand, you have a chance to review this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see it.
Okay. Do you have a minute or so?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the past ones, Mr. Ford.
Ray, you want to explain the dash ones or what's that?
Well, the dash one amendments, thank you, were the changes that were necessary to accommodate the different interests. As we originally proposed the legislation, it was R2. Aggressive, and it was unnecessary as we originally proposed it. And what we did is we talked with various interest groups, and they have accepted this language. I'm not going to say they've endorsed it. They have accepted this language.
Okay.
And I'm sorry. The language accommodates what I had explained to you, sir, in my testimony.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Fett? And let's go into close the public hearing on Senate Bill 838, and we'll go into a work session on Senate Bill 838. Let's get a motion for the
dash. I'll move the dash one amendment.
Senator Wyatt, I'll move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
We'll move SB 838 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Wild moves Senate Bill 838 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Chairman, clerk, call roll, please.
Senator Griffin? Senator Burke?
Aye.
Senator
Wild?
Aye.
Senator Turner? Chair, aye. 838 is amended to the pass the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a chair or volunteer to carry this bill?
I can carry it. It'll be the first time I did anything for that bill.
And it's a good thing.
Senator Wyatt will carry 838. Close the work session on 838 and open the public hearing and pause the work session on 886. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 886 restricts fees that the Department of Quality, Environmental Quality, or Water Resource Department may charge at the time of an application for an issuing for denial of licenses and permits.
Ms. Lutridge. And Helen, Senator Fisher will testify on this, so as soon as he gets here, we'll do it, okay? But in the meantime, go ahead and open up the hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Helen Lutridge, Management Services Division Administrator for the Department of Environmental Quality. The proposed legislation places three restrictions on the department's ability to collect fees for licenses or permits. First, it allows for collection of 100% of the fee only after the application is approved. Second, it caps the final fee collection at 50% for rejected applications. And third, it establishes a $10 cap on fee collection at the time of initial application. I'd like to just briefly address the impact of each of these restrictions in order. The restriction on collecting 100% of the fee until after the application is approved would cause a shift in the timing of fee payment. During this shift to new timing, revenue to the department would drop very sharply, leaving inadequate funds to pay for the permitting and licensing activities that are needed. For example, permit applications for new facilities that are very complex or that are very controversial can take over a year to complete the technical review and the public comment processes and the iterative processes with the permittee. This timing shift in the payment of fees and the resulting revenue reduction would be more severe in those permit and license activities that can least afford it, where permit backlogs already exist due to insufficient funding. Where permit backlogs are already long, the shift in timing would further reduce available funds to pay for permit work. This drop in fee revenue would reduce the number of permitting staff that the program could afford, causing an even greater increase in the backlog. As a result, this legislation would have the immediate effect of increasing current permit backlogs or creating backlogs where none currently exist. By delaying receipt of the operating revenues, this bill will reduce the department's ability to protect the environment and to provide the level of service that these permittees need. Unless there's a replacement source of funding to carry us through and accommodate the one-time shift in the timing of revenue collection. The agency has not yet completed a detailed assessment of the fiscal impact of this legislation for the 9901 biennium. There are several things that this fiscal assessment would require. First, an AG opinion on which of the department fees would be subject to this legislation. Second, a precise calendar of the expected receipt of each application. Third, the average permit or license application processing time for each type of permit or license, the resulting revenue reduction, the associated reduction in agency activity if alternative funding is not identified, and finally, an assessment of any potential impact on EPA delegated authority. We estimate that this fiscal analysis will require at least 2 and possibly 6 weeks of person effort to complete. The second impact of the bill would be capping the final fee collection at 50% for rejected applications. Now, this provision would result in a small reduction in fee revenue for the agency. The disapproval rate for permit and license applications is very low. It would require a second round of invoicing for applications that are initially disapproved. This adds some additional accounting costs, although not very much, to the department's operations. And then the third provision of the bill is the $10 cap at the time of initial application. We very likely, if this bill were to pass, would not invoice for this $10 fee because the processing and invoicing time would probably exceed the $10. So in closing, we must oppose this legislation. The shift in fee collection timing would cause adverse impacts on our ability to provide timely service to permit and license applicants.
Questions of Nancy? Can you do?
This is funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
you
meant,
excuse me. Well, yeah, you're looking. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in this, on page 2, you refer to a rough reduction of roughly half the agency's revenues on those applications, what is the agency's revenue? I should know that in a way it means, but...
Mr. Chair, Senator George, actually, you should not know that. I don't know that, and we wouldn't know without this full analysis. This is just a very rough estimate.
But, I mean, what is the total revenue? If it's roughly half, we can make that calculation really quick, right?
Yeah, and I can't even give you that figure. The way we even come up with, you probably wonder how we come up with a roughly half without knowing a number. We figure that about half of the applications would come in halfway through the biennium and might be delayed into the following biennium for collection of the fee revenue, and that's how we came up with that estimate. So it's just a matter of the timing of the application. If they come in early in the biennium, mm-hmm. we figure that they would be approved before the end of that biennium and we would have the revenue. Yeah. But if they come in halfway through the biennium or later, then we wouldn't have it until the next biennium.
Well, based on the past history, what would roughly half be?
I'll have to check and get that for you, Senator George. I'm very sorry. I can't give that to you right now.
Any idea if it's $10,000, is it $20,000, $100,000?
I can tell you that in calendar year 1998, our total fee revenue from industry and others was somewhere in the neighborhood of $26 million. That was the calendar year 1998.
So this section would be a small part of that total, right?
It would not be that whole total. You are correct. And I don't know what portion of that total it would be without having the AG analysis on which fees it would affect.
Well, oh, thank you very much.
Welcome. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Senator Fisher, you want to come forward and testify as well?
Thank you, Senator O'Connell and committee members. I'm Senator Bill Fisher, and I'm from District 23 down in Roseburg, and the northern part of Josephine Jackson County, along with southern Douglas County. I didn't have much of a chance to review the testimony there, but I got the general drift of the testimony. It's amazing to me the consternation that something like this causes a government agency when they don't have any particular recognition of the consternation they cause everybody out in their constituency when the permits dawdle and drag and drag and drag out to the private industry. So I would like to keep that in the back of my mind that some of those things would even out if you had to make a few adjustments in the first part of the operation of something like this in order to get it going. It could be done, and then if they were behind that far in collecting their monies, they would know that it was on tap if they got their work done in the next biennium. So it wouldn't be a matter of possibly juggling things for one biennium until they got into the swing of things. They might even find it if they turned their up from this so fast that they were getting even more money in. So I think this is what this bill is designed to at least get a discussion started on getting some permits out from some of the agencies in a reasonable length of time. I want to give you just one instance that happened here just recently, and in fairness, it wasn't the Water Resources Department, it was the DEQ. We have a small business that came into the Sutherland Enterprise Zone and got all their permits and got started operating. And they're a bean curd manufacturing company, and they sell this product to the Taco Bells and the different restaurants that use the taco with the bean filler. They're processing agricultural products. They're not making any kind of industrial chemicals or anything like this. Some of this material spills on the floor, and they were not allowed to put it into the regular septic system or into the regular drain system. If I'm not mistaken, they're the only one in Douglas County that has a separate industrial septic tank within their facility. Now, this is... tanks have to have a pump in there to circulate the contents of that tank, or it solidifies. so it has to be recirculating all the time and keeping it stirred up. They were told that they had to have a special application fee for this and a permit fee for this tank, separate over a regular septic tank, because it was industrial. Then, to add to the problem, the septic tank, commercial septic tank pumpers could not pump an industrial septic tank under their commercial tank permit. So they had to have a special permit to pump this one tank. Then it couldn't be utilized through the regular dumping process. It had to go out on farm ground, and it was a perfectly legitimate farm product. But they then had to permit the farmer to have a permit to apply it to the field. Three separate permits for this. This process went on and on and on. They paid several hundred dollars for their permit for their septic tank. It went on and on and on, and they were operating and filling it up, and it went on something like over 9 months, and they were not able to drain that thing. In the process of that, the bean curd kept getting thicker and thicker and thicker in their tank until their pump burnt out. They had to get a new pump. The next one burnt out. And come to find out, the permit, as near as I could tell, was laying on somebody's desk for the want of a letter to finalize it and get it done. And in the meantime, 17 jobs are being put into jeopardy, not to mention the headaches that these people have and the cost of replacing pumps, simply because somebody can't get things scheduled around to give a guy a chance to operate something that is perfectly legal to do. If this guy had been raising beans as a farmer, the beans would have been dumped in his field and not harvested or anything else. If you'd have been a local landowner or a housekeeper, you could have probably left your garden beans unharvested and they would have rotted on the ground. Nobody would have said a particular thing, but in order to put this stuff, which is agricultural product, back on the soil, all these things had to be done, and there's no concern on the part of the people doing the permit to help these people out to get things going. And it's high time. I mean, this is, I could sit here all afternoon and tell you the problems we have with permits that just drag on and drag on and drag on. We in private industry most often don't get paid until we do the job. When we do the job, then we get paid. We manage to do it, and we do it timely. If we don't do it timely, we don't get our money. It's just plain and simple. And I think it's only fair that we start applying some of these principles to some of these things. This doesn't deny them money in any particular, with the exception that if they deny a permit, they're only getting half of the fee, the way it's figured into this bill. And that is no more than reasonable because they don't have any follow-up problems. So if they're not having to follow something up, why do they need the full fee? It's just basically something that is going to allow them to self-start and to get things done and put the pressure on them externally without somebody having to go back there. And the more he argues with them to get his permit going and working on the time, the more tendency it is to just put it off and wait hold them up and cause them problems. This way they have every incentive to get out and do their job and get it done. And I'm not unwilling to consider some friendly amendments on this thing to work with it. If indeed it costs them more than half the cost and they can justify it costs more than half the cost to issue a permit and go through the denial process, I'm not unwilling to adjust that fee. We had to have some place to start, and this seemed like a reasonable thing. I wasn't interested in necessarily, although that's a whole other subject that I think can be argued, I'm not particularly interested in the cost of the fees at this point in time. Certainly they're of worry to the people that have to apply for them, but that wasn't the point of this. The point of this is to give them something that will help them internally to get rid of the snarl of having to, we've had instances of where permits and stuff have been held up simply because they can't take the money in Roseburg and put it in the bank in Roseburg. You got to wait till the check gets up to say they got transferred up to Salem and get all this material back and forth. It's no kind of a business deal at all. I can change my banking when I come up here and I bank at the U.S. Bank, and I can come right here and do anything right here in Salem that they can do in Roseburg, and have it credited right in Roseburg the same day through the computer system. There's absolutely no reason that the government could be working the same arrangements. And so I would certainly recommend that we have some consideration on this. And as I said, I'd be more than happy to consider some friendly amendments or some adjusting amendments that would allow the agencies to adjust their workload or adjust their time frame or something so that it would fix it so that they weren't in having a big problem within a particular biennium, or at least the first biennium to start out with.
Questions with Senator Fisher? Bill, the time frame is awful tight. I don't know if we can get some amendments back and get it back in our committee in time to hear it, but if you've got some thoughts on some amendments, perhaps you can talk to Ms. Helen Lutridge at the back of the room with DEQ and go from there, or whatever your thoughts are.
Well, I appreciate that, and again, you know, I don't have any delusions about the way the process works, but my feeling was that something needed to be gotten done, and I personally have been extremely busy, and I know that this committee has been extremely busy during this session, and if we don't do any more than establish a dialogue here, at least I certainly appreciate the opportunity to come here before the committee and have the committee here put this on record, because I'm dead serious about getting something done about private industry and private people being held up unduly with their permitting process. And to me, it only makes sense to have them be self-starting and self-disciplined in this process. This would just be, you know, they get their money as fast as they can get through the process, so if they can figure out a quicker way to do it, the incentive is there for them to do more with and get it done faster and find ways of doing that, and that in turn helps the people that are in the process of getting a permit. My feeling, this is just a start. There's three or four other agencies that I can name here without any trouble at all that I would like to be under this same provision.
Anyway, I hear what you're saying. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Tegel. How's that grandchild?
Mr. Chair, the grandchild is fine.
How old is the grandchild now?
She's 2 months old.
How much does she weigh?
Where's the pictures?
The pictures are in my briefcase, and she weighs about 10 pounds.
Isn't that an awful lot of weight for 2 months old? I mean, I'm not one to speak, obviously.
No, he's not.
Seems like a lot of weight.
Maybe. Big girl.
Mr. Pagel, go ahead, please. Ignore this guy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Martha Pagel, Water Resources Department. You have my written testimony, which basically covers some of the same practical concerns that you heard from DEQ on this issue. It was helpful for me to hear Senator Fisher's comments about why he brought forward the bill in the first place, and I hope that I can bring some information forward that might suggest that maybe we don't need it with respect to Water Resources Department. In particular, the concern about timely processing of permits, and I point out that this bill applies to permits and licenses. And for water resources, we're talking about applications for new water rights, which we call permits. A couple sessions back through the Senate Water Committee, there was a major overhaul of our permit processing procedures, including statutory timelines for processing. And prior to that time, we had a big backlog. Now we no longer have a backlog. We are meeting the statutory deadlines, and the fees that we collect for our water right application permits are according to the negotiated set of fees that went along with that major overhaul bill. So I think with respect to our major workload on processing water right permit applications, we're basically getting the job done and we're charging the fees in accordance with the major statutory overhaul that occurred in 1995 with Senate Bill 674. The other concern with paying fees if they're fully earned. The information that we've brought forward over the years in dealing with our fees and two ways and means shows that our application fees are already, the applicant pays well below the true cost of processing, and we're at about a 60-40 relationship now where 60% is borne by the general fund on our staff and 40% paid by the applicant in application fees. So we already start with a lag. We fully earn those fees up front during the processing of the application, during the review of the application, whether it comes out as a yes or a no. But again, under the revised process that we have from a couple years back, we do a quick analysis called the initial review. The person gets that within 2 weeks. And if that shows that they're going to have a hard time getting the permit, they have the option to withdraw the application and they get all but $50 back. So we already have a process for making sure that both we're timely and that we earn the fees. And if the person ultimately does not receive the water right, they don't have to pay, of course, the filing and recording fees that were otherwise required. So I think that's pretty much in order. And from a policy standpoint, we've argued before that the public is already largely subsidizing the cost of water right applications because the permit fees are not commensurate with the processing fees. So we would have real concerns from a policy standpoint that this would further increase that subsidy. And other than that, the points that are in my written testimony are very similar to what you heard from DEQ.
Thank you, Michael. So you're going to sell out your other agents, DEQ, and just leave them on their own because you guys are doing okay. Is that what I understood in your testimony?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, that's why I put in the policy issue that I think from a policy standpoint and adventure against the DEQ too, that there's the public is already paying to some extent in the general fund provided to these agencies.
Well, you say that more nicely, Ms. Cagle. Thank you very much.
I would never dream of selling out my sister agencies.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a while.
An observation. I understand Senator Fisher's being upset. Personally, I would remove water resources from the bill. There are timelines in there. They're pretty set in statute. But having to deal with businesses in and I'm more of an industrial area of the state, and how they have to deal with DEQ, I would say quite the opposite in terms of DEQ. Perhaps $10 is too low, but personally I would like to be penalized if it applies to DEQ, because, I mean, when you have businesses say that they would almost prefer that these processes be turned over to the federal government, that's very hard for business to say that they are at that point. And so I think we have to start creating some incentives to get things done.
Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 886, and we're going to open the public hearing possible work session on 959.
And we don't have enough time to speak on this because we have a court requesting a lot of resources and a lot of resources that you're not sure it's okay.
Yeah, and we can go ahead and work 959 because we're already scheduled. And Ray, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 959 requires the Water Resource Commission to consider proposals to mitigate the impact of proposed groundwater withdrawal on surface water when determining whether the standard for approval of a groundwater permit is met within the Deschutes Basin. We heard this issue on the 22nd of this month, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, talked about the Deschutes Basin groundwater modeling project. We received a copy of the City of Redmond resolution supporting this measure. Talk about aquifers and water withdrawal and wells.
Thank you. Michael, we don't need amendments to this bill, do we?
Yes, we do.
Okay. All right, please. Yes, this the amendments will get those passed down.
This lady here. Did we do something wrong?
It's
water.
Your mind goes faster if you both came forward together. Sister agency, yes.
I'm listening.
The chair members of the committee, for the record, Martha Cagle, Water Resources, and with me is Jill Zarnowitz from Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We do have dash one amendments. As we mentioned last week when we first heard this bill, it was brought forward at the request specifically of some folks in the Deschutes Basin to help give some assistance to a project that we've already started there, working with the community group, a broad-based group of interest, to try to develop what we're calling a basin-wide mitigation plan to help address and offset and avoid injury that might be connected with new groundwater uses as it relates to surface water use. And what these amendments do are basically to substitute for what you would have in the original printed version of Senate Bill 959. And in the first instance, it clarifies that mitigation can be considered when evaluating the impacts of a new groundwater right application, mitigation for impacts that might occur to the surface water. And that could occur either on a project-by-project basis, a case-by-case basis, or as we're indicating here, it could also be done on a basin-wide or watershed-based approach to do it in a collective fashion. The key objective there would be to avoid injury, and that's what we would look for in the mitigation plan, that we're not injuring the existing water rights in the process. Section 2 of the proposed amendment deals specifically with the Deschutes Basin process and kind of gives your blessings to that process, directs them to prepare a basin-wide mitigation plan as a demonstration project.
Jill? Yes, Jill Zarnowitz with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We just wanted to state that we support these changes, that we've been working with this group in the Deschutes Basin and believe that the process has been going very well. This sort of codifies the process and gives us a deadline, too, that we hope is pretty firm, too. So our main concern was maintaining that there was no injury to existing water rights. I believe this language takes care of that and also gets the Deschutes Basin going, process going in a very solid way.
Okay. Thank you. Martha, is the sponsor okay with the advantage forms? I think he is, I believe.
Yes. Mr. Chair, that's my understanding that Senator Bryant is.
Okay. I'm getting him out of the back here, too. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will decide to testify on Senate Bill 959. I'm going to close the public hearing on the work session. Senator Corcoran?
Move the Gashman Amendment 959.
Senator Corcoran moves the Gashman Amendment to Senate Bill 959. Is there discussion? Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Corcoran?
Move 959 as amended to the floor of due pass.
Senator Corcoran moves Senate Bill 959 as amended to the floor of due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Hearing none, the clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator
Burris?
Senator
Collins? Aye. Senator Lyle? Aye. Senator Collins? Chair, aye. Senate Bill 959 is amended to pass the floor. Due pass recommendation will offer Senator Bryant, the sponsor of the bill, the opportunity to carry, Diane. Okay. Close the work session on 959. Open on 989.
As chair members of the committee, Senate Bill 989 eliminates provisions of granting continuing consent to the federal government to acquire lands in Oregon, requires approval of the legislative assembly before the governor may convey certain lands. And we've got to
publish amendment. Okay, you want to do this in Well, no, is that the missile you just found?
Yes, that's what we'll get.
Okay, why don't you go get him? We're going to be at ease for a few more folks. We got two bills to get out of here before 3 o'clock.
We're going to make it.
I think we might.
We're going to make it.
Yeah.
Is it better go to 1189 and get back to this one?
Does this take away any rights that the land board has in this?
No, I don't know. I don't think so, because the county forest, for example, are held in trust for the state.
That's true.
For the counties, and they get the taxes about 4 million.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think it's on the record. Now you know for
that.
For the record,
Mr. Chairman. My name is Glenn Stonebrake. I'm with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. Senate Bill 989 is...
I'm by myself.
That's the wrong one.
Can I get one of those?
I'm sorry.
Jeez. You're popular. I can't even do that to him.
Good bill, man.
Good old shit pass.
Go ahead. Senate Bill 989 actually just reinstates a U.S. constitutional right back to the state.
Glenn, what's your other option? Okay, folks, back here. That's what's funny about...
Okay.
Because I'm going to pass this bill out of here.
There could be some questions in there.
And there might be some questions.
Okay.
Yeah. Sit tight for a second. Yeah, check them out left and right.
That's great.
You got one more at this issue?
If you can you get people to stick to the topic and get it over with and don't read 5 pages of testimony.
That's right. That's right. Can I have a cup of coffee?
Are we at Easy
Bay? Well, we haven't got anybody here. If you want to, I'll buy it. You'll go get it.
I don't drink coffee.
Oh,
I'll buy it for you.
Well, no, I'm not going to encourage anyone to drink that stuff.
You got it.
Huh?
That was a good turn.
Turn it off a moment, if you will, Don.
Stores the power to the legislature that was granted to the state legislature by the U.S. Constitution. In the U.S. Constitution, I have in the handout that I gave to you from Article 1, Section 8, and it lists that as the powers of Congress. And then Clause 17 of Section 8 mentions that to exercise exclusive legislation, and in all cases, and so on, then the next underlined part, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be. In 1967, the Oregon legislature granted basically carte blanche authority to the federal government to purchase land within the state and to have exclusive legislative authority. And that's on the second page of the handout. What this bill would do would remove those sections of statute that gave that authority to the federal government. In other words, placing it back in the hands of the legislature to, on a case-by-case situation in which the federal government wishes to purchase land within the state, and the legislature would look at each case and either grant or deny authority, with one exception, and that's 20 ORS 272.050, and that would be amended slightly. That section of the law granted county governments authority to deal with the federal government when they were acquiring national forests by amending the part that you can see is taken out, and this is in the Dash Amendment, would grant the county government the authority to virtually veto, if you will, any purchase by the federal government within a county. And the main reason for this is that because if the federal government were to purchase large tracts of land within a county, they can virtually ruin the economic base of that county. And so the county would have to agree, and then the state legislature would have to agree before federal purchases of more property within the state.
Glenn, what's happened to bring this bill forward in your own mind?
There's two things. One, when I listened to President Clinton's address, he mentioned $1 billion that he wanted to obtain to purchase more properties that he would see would be good for wildlife and this sort of thing. Another one is that there's a House Resolution 707 before Congress right now to take offshore oil and gas royalties, and they would earmark at least $378 million per year to acquire more private property within states for, and they list a lot of reasons, but primarily for wildlife habitat.
So this basically gives the county and the state government the ability to to enter into that dialogue about the purchase of the state land.
That's correct. And constitutionally, it would simply put the by removing the statute, puts the authority back in the hands of the legislature as designed by the makers of the U.S. Constitution. And they saw that it was not the role of the federal government to be owning large amounts of land within a state. And if they wanted to purchase, they shall get the consent of the legislature of that state. And then this bill, because there is statute on the book, 277.050, granting counties some authority in that acquisition as well. And originally, the way it's addressed, it deals with only national forests. By the amendments that we proposed, it would make it on all property within a county. But the county government would have that authority to approve or disapprove.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, explain the repeal of 0.030 and 0.050, please, of 272.
030 is the part that gives consent to the United States to acquire land for public buildings.
And it's your opinion that we shouldn't give that consent?
Well, that's correct. We don't know exactly what it might do besides the public buildings.
But has it done anything in the past?
Well, public buildings can be such things as buildings that they might put on game refuges and this sort of thing, which they do. And if they're going to have exclusive legislative authority over it, they would not even have to pay any attention to our land use laws.
Post offices?
Well, any building should have to adhere to our land use laws if the rest of the people of the state have to adhere to the land use laws.
It seems like it's a bill in search of a problem. I don't understand what problem you're addressing. You know, the question of the purchase by the federal government of additional lands for, you know, migratory birds or, you know, endangered guppies or whatever the hell, I mean, that's going to be a benefit to somebody. Are you sure all your landowners out there in eastern Oregon are sure of what you're doing here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Clifford, this is exactly what has happened in our state in several cases where a certain group would purchase a ranch, which happened to have a lot of wet areas. And then that group would in turn, with a brokerage fee, which was quite handsome, would in turn sell that to the federal government. Now, that may all sound like very good beneficial use of that land.
That's what the Nature Conservancy does, right?
And others.
Yeah.
But the point I'm getting at is that takes it off the tax rolls of that county. Like Lake County has hurt big time. And a lot of our rural counties are hurting because there is no tax base left. I mean, it's a shrinking tax base. It's not an increasing tax base.
I understand that part of it. Another question, Mr. Chair. What's the intent of removing the adding in Section 270.020 as amended to read in prior approval of the Legislative Assembly?
Excuse me, what was the statute again?
It's line 15 of page 1 of the bill, excuse me.
Excuse me,
I see you got passed. I don't
happen to have that.
Yeah. I don't have the deck on door there. It is.
Senator, what was that line? Yeah.
Section 2.
Section 2, line 15. You add and prior approval legislative assembly.
Senator Corcoran, that has now been removed, and we are removing that entire section of the law, 272.020.
So that's removed in one of the dash amendments?
Yes.
Okay.
So on the printed out sheet with the X's in it, that entire section is removed.
Okay, Senator. Let's have Richard Metterly talk to us for a little bit. He needs to be talking.
Thank you, Chair Jarno. I'm Ken Metterly, representing from District 48, Southern Oregon Coast. I got involved in this bill at the request of our county commissioners, primarily Commissioner Nikki Whitty. The concern that the Coos County Commissioners have is that, as has been alluded to by Senator Corcoran, that as federal agencies come in and buy more and more land and take it out of production, the county loses in several ways. Number one, it's taken off the tax rolls. Number two, it's taken off out of production. And it's to the point where just recently we had, in a point in case, a 600-acre, a very productive farm, one of our most productive farms in the lower Coquille Valley, which was brought up by the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service and taken out of production. This makes hardships on the local industries because the service industries have less of a base to work on. And I used to be in the cattle hauling business and the cattle buying business. It reduces the base for all of these different types of industries within the community. I think there's also a perception that natural resource land is better protected and better managed if it's owned by the government agencies and in many cases non-managed. And I think this is a fallacy that we in public office need to take a good, hard, long look at. In my own experiences, for 34 years, I managed my family's ranch in the Coquille Valley, heavily managed it with pasturing and haying and all the other activities of a cattle ranch. We found that in the wintertime, when the ducks and the geese would come through the area, that they would be just take over the ranch where we had managed. And yet we had property that was unmanaged, wetland that had reed canary grass and cattails and that kind of thing. The ducks didn't go there. They much preferred the managed property. So I think we need to be very careful in our thinking that government agencies of all types, but in this case particularly the federal government agencies, should be encouraged and allowed to at will buy up private property and take it off our tax rolls and take it out of production. I think this is an important bill. It was important to our county commissioners, and I urge your passage.
Questions of the commission?
Yeah.
Senator Wiles.
Where are the amendments?
That's shoes?
I have neither.
You know?
I'm waiting for them.
Can you see the grass shoes?
Yes, I have. I didn't think you were going to meet till this evening, though, so I didn't bring them with me.
Well, these guys have just been pushing me to the brink of extinction. We're
tired of hanging out with them.
You
want a Mr. Chairman, if I may, or Senator Wilde, he wasn't here earlier when I started. While he's getting a copy of the dash shoes, you
can just bring up.
That's what the dash shoes will do in a future form.
Actually eliminate 030?
Right.
Okay. Perfect. In its entirety?
Mm-hmm.
So 20-30-40-40-40-40. My name is Wolf. I'm going to read. Sounds exciting. Are there more to testify, or is this it? I guess the eyes will be over.
Yeah. You never suspect, you know, that it's influencing the federal government, and of course there's all kinds of jokes you can make about that too, huh?
Well, it might give you a chance. On the floor to do that.
I wouldn't do that. I'm not the same guy.
I know you're not.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else testify on Senate Bill 989?
I'm down.
Close the public hearing on 989.
Yes.
Then I've got a workshop on Senate Bill 989.
Good. Yeah.
We have a dash two. Did you folks have a chance to get it later?
I did.
Yep. And I've got even two copies of them now, which seem quite as good.
Are we in a work session?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I move the dash two amendment.
Senator Shannon moves the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 989. Any objections? Any discussion? Hearing none, for order.
I move Senate Bill 989 to the floor amended with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Shannon moves Senate Bill 989 as amended with a floor due pass recommendation. Discussion, objections, hearing none, the clerk call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator George? Senator Shannon?
I'll do this,
Commissioner Whitty.
Aye.
Senator Wilde?
Aye.
Senator
Chair Turner. Sure, Senate Bill 989 is passed with 4 to 5 recommendations. Senator Shannon, would you want to?
I'd love to.
Okay. Senator Shannon will care. That's the key. Close the work session on 989. We're going to open the public hearing of possible work session on 1189. We got 15 minutes, gang, and I'm not going to push you on this thing. We can look through it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 989 expands enforcement procedures for water quality violations and declares an emergency effective upon passage. We heard public testimony on this bill on the 22nd of this month. That testimony included the Federal Clean Water Act, consent orders, a lawsuit or citizen shield, public review process, third-party lawsuits, also called citizen suits, alternative pathways allowed by the Clean Water Act, and we took a look at the decision tree. The pathway created by the Bill 1189.
No one's here on that. I think over there. Oh, it's a ledger. Sorry, John. There are dash ones and twos, I believe.
And yes, there's
a few. Hold on. Mr. Ledger, go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you will recall that this bill was heard about a week ago, late in the evening. It has to do with enforcement procedures by the DEQ, and we talked briefly about the problem that occurs sometimes whereby a person finds they're violating the standards and they enter into a consent agreement with the DEQ that will bring them into compliance. It might be a couple of years. It's a big project, too. And during that time, they are susceptible to third-party lawsuits, $25,000 a day, and essentially being forced to settle out of court even though they're on a consent order and coming into compliance. We did have discussions with DEQ, and these last set of amendments that came in reflect those discussions with DEQ, primarily refinements of when certain time periods start and lawyering of language. And I don't believe there's any opposition to the bill or the amendment.
So, Mr. Ledger, you're saying the dash twos are the ones that's been agreed to?
Yeah. And I do have the DEQ is here.
Well, I want confirmation from DEQ lawyer or whomever you want to come forward, please, and talk to us about the dash twos.
Mr. Chair, for the record, members of the committee, Lori Onan with the Department of Environmental Quality. With me is Larry Knudsen with the Department of Justice, and he's here to answer any questions you may have because it says it concerns legal issues. But yes, the amendments are those that were discussed upon and agreed to by DEQ and the proponents of the bill. We do have a couple comments we'd like to make for the record.
Okay.
The first one is something that we discussed with AOI after the first hearing, and that was just a cost issue. Because Senate Bill 1189 does establish a new, more extensive enforcement process, in some cases, when a process, a more extensive process is requested by a facility, there will be additional costs. If that cost is not paid for by the facility, it's something that we would bear. And so what we discussed with AOI is that we'll monitor this during, if this bill passes, we would monitor that. If it was a significant cost, which would cause a problem with reducing other services that we have to deliver, we would look at something like cost recovery and come back and talk to the legislature about that.
I think that's a very good idea, Lori. I would agree with that.
And Larry Knudsen has one additional comment.
Actually, to Senator Tarnow and committee. I wanted to make two really brief comments. First,
your name,
I'm sorry, Larry Knudsen with the Department of Justice here on behalf of DEQ. First of all, I want to make certain for the record that we point out that the law in this area is not very developed, and we can't be sure that, at least from DEQ's point of view, that this statute is actually going to create the comparable state program. They're supportive of the bill, but we wanted to recognize that there is a certain amount of uncertainty. Second, we would hope that the bill would be construed in such a manner that it would allow DEQ to bypass this 1189 pathway in those circumstances where we are going to be conducting a contested case hearing anyway, and third parties would have an opportunity to participate in that process. Assuming that the law develops such that that wouldn't be a comparable state program, we would like to be able to essentially save cost and time by taking that route. It's conceivable that the act would be interpreted in that fashion, although it's not clear, and we would just like to be on the record that we think that's the way it should be construed.
And Lori and Larry, for your information, we will have a interim agricultural resources committee working on a variety of issues during the interim. And if this thing pops up with a red flag, I would urge you to contact that committee to pass on your concerns and if you do see some problems as this bill develops, you might also keep that committee informed too.
Thank you, Senator.
Questions for Clay?
Give me some idea of the scope of applications for these things. You're not going to see that many in a biennium, are you? I guess, I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Corcoran, our enforcement division looked at this, and they could only come up with a guesstimate, but what they thought could potentially be, and again, these numbers are just kind of guessing, about potentially a third of the industrial cases, if they went to this pathway, that would be about 20 a biennium.
Okay.
And same for the municipal sources, about 20 a biennium, so you're looking at 40 total a biennium, perhaps.
So I'm just that's on the record basis to reinforce the issue of cost potentially today.
And I might mention regarding cost, John Ledger, is the cost issue is not, it is one of where we run into problems with what is cost is comparable. The federal government doesn't have costs. We don't object to the cost, and we see it as a benefit. Just once you do that, then who has to pay? If an environmental group requests a hearing, do they have to pay? And it's not the same as the federal government. So it's more of a legal mishmash than for us dollars.
Questions for three? Well, thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
That concludes the sign-up sheet testimony. So we're going to close the public hearing on 1189 and go into work session on 1189.
Yes, sir.
Senator
Corson. Move advance 2 minutes to 1189.
Senator Corson moves advance 2 minutes to 1189. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none of the order? Senator Corson.
Move 1189 to the floor to be passed.
Senator Corson moves Senate Bill 1189 to the floor as amended with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator George?
Senator Hamm?
Aye.
Senator Wild?
Aye.
Chair Connell?
Chair Rice, Senator 11-9, the floor is amended. The due pass recommendation? Chair Curry. Close the work session on 11-9. We are adjourned for the day.
Well, send them over to your house, I guess.